Well, Jimmy, thanks for coming out, man.
Welcome. Thank you for having me, brother.
Where are you at? You're in right outside of Denver.
We're South Denver, yep. So Centennial, Colorado. I live in Castle Rock.
Yeah. Oh. When I was stationed in Colorado Springs at 10th Group, I lived in Monument.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get up in Castle Rock because it was awesome.
Yeah.
They have good food, a good community. I've heard it's grown a bit.
It's grown a bit, yeah. And we've been there, what I'm guessing, man, 11 years, something like that, 10, 11 years.
Oh, wow.
So just watching the growth in that time has been insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But good restaurants now, and they've got, you know, it's starting to look a little bit, some of the higher-end mountain towns where they got shopping on ground level and there's, like, condos.
Yeah.
Above it, it's starting to, yeah, where it used to be like a tattoo parlor and a check cashing place. So it's, yeah, like, all right, it's not, you're not really.
Yeah. They can't afford to be in there
right
nowadays. It's what I like about that whole area. It's on Front Range. When I was in Monument off of Highway 105, I could jump on my KTM and hit the bottom of the mountain,
yeah,
in like 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then be lost.
Yeah.
Up in those mountains.
You just hit the, you know, any pass going over and then you're in it. You
it's
know?
Crazy.
Yeah. Beautiful. Move there from Montana. And the cool thing about Montana is you can go 15 minutes any direction by yourself. You know,
yeah.
Colorado, not so much. You can get in the mountains, but there's just people everywhere.
Yeah, it's limited and there's a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Denver is out of control, man.
Yeah.
Denver. How are you dealing with that? Because you're coming from rural Montana into a little less rural Castle Rock, and then you're in Centennial in Denver. Every time I go to Denver to teach or do something out in Parker,
yeah,
it's so crowded, man. It's changed a lot from how I knew it.
It's pretty crowded. It's that fight's coming. And what I tell people is that, you know, you're going to run out of places to run. No matter where you go, there you are. So what I'm in charge of is showing my kids how to fight this fight on a daily basis. You know,
yeah,
it's not coming in the ways of, we'll call it, warfare that I'm accustomed to. But so I'm having to grow and learn how to walk into the library and say my piece, and to walk into the commissioner's meetings and say my piece, and to do that and remind people that it's your job to protect your kids and to educate your kids. And I'm not asking, you know, and they're all like, whoa. I mean, to the sheriff, to the local sheriff, I'm like, I'm not asking permission. And they're like, you shouldn't, you know, like whatever. Cause at first it's, you're the guy that's like, well, I guess I'll allow that. And you're like, I wasn't asking, like, I'm asking permission to protect my family. And they're like, oh no. And as well, you shouldn't. And then like the constitution, yeah, comes back in their mind for the,
yeah,
first time. And you know, whatever.
Oh yeah. I actually serve this community and
oh, that's right. Yeah, this guy knows the truth that I actually work for him. Okay.
It's a very interesting thing when you say that, because if you would have if me and you had this conversation, man, maybe even 3 years ago, we would have been on the brink, and I wouldn't have been as concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in the middle of COVID, trying to figure things out. Things were a little chaotic, but kind of post that and the dust settling, I've realized, like you said, people's personal investment in their kids' education and their own health and wellness and their own security, all the things that they've outsourced, they have to now, if they're ever going to realize it in history, they have to now at least acknowledge,
yeah,
that they've lost complete control. And when you say fight, you know, a lot of it has to do with the ideology and all the culture that exists in our communities. Mm-hmm. How have you been able to kind of wrap your head around that? And what are you specifically doing about it via, you know, Abel Shepherd and your experiences?
It is... there's a battle for the truth, and there's a book out there called Christian Manifesto, and my faith plays a lot into that, right? So leading in with that, that's something I didn't have back then, or at least I was raised in a home that was a Christian home, and then I went to Sunday school, and I was like, cool stories, you know, small guy beats the big guy, David Goliath, whatever, but I didn't know the context of that. Like, I didn't, so to answer your question, once I realized that this is a true story, that there is, and I'm talking about the Bible, there's an old agreement and a new agreement. Let's call it an old contract and a new contract, or Old Testament and New Testament. There's a cross in the middle, and we're not done, which places us here. Like, we're not here or up here. We're actually in it. So there's actually a book of Jimmy being written. And I was like, hold on a second. So for an action adventurer guy, all of a sudden, this just got really interesting, because the truest story ever told, I'm in it. Mm-hmm. And there's my chapters being written. That chapter's gonna rock, right? And I joke and say the book of James has already been taken. So there's a book of Jimmy Graham being written right now. And all of a sudden that puts you into the story. And most guys I know are action adventure in everything except their life. So yeah. accountability dictates that I get moving. And I'm like, okay, so I actually thrive in adversity. So when I found that neutral place where I wasn't doing much, that was destructive. You know, for guys that aspire to do more and be more and that have a calling on their life, man, you can't be idle. You know, and you've seen that. We would say that, like, hey, team guys, don't let them get bored because it gets dangerous, right? But I'm seeing that, you know, and probably like you, I've had veteran SEAL buddies that have opted out, man. Moment of weakness, they just probably with alcohol, maybe with drugs or whatever, but they just believed a lie and they're not around anymore, right? So you know, that's a little bit heavy, but drawing those guys back in and saying, one, I need you healthy, and once you're healthy, we need you. Like, I need you. I need to recruit you because if they had the purpose that I feel right now, and back to your original question, what am I able to do? I'm able to model healthy. And whatever that means, it just means I'm going this way. To me, shepherd means teacher and leader and protector. Well, how do you shepherd? I'm going and you're invited. I can't make you do anything, but I'm going to go out on my motorcycle with my little boy and you can come with me. Mm-hmm. And we're going to watch our language and we're not going to get drunk. And I set parameters. Again, I'm not your dad. You do whatever you want, but not on my trip, right? And then they come and everybody comes back better. Because I say it this way, we the people starts with me the person. So if I get healthy, I have something to contribute. Do you want to be part of the problem or part of the solution? Well, I want to be part of the solution. Okay, well, accountability dictates that you become a better man. I go, I'm all in, let's go. So that all of that, and it's a purpose that was written for me. And I don't know about you, when I got out of the service, it was, and I know a lot of people, try to find what's available and nothing fits. And I'm like, man, I'm not seeing anything that's me. And in a faith perspective, I would call that, where does my calling meet my spiritual gifts? Like the things that I was made to do and the things I'm called to do. When those meet, man, you're gonna love that guy. Like once I introduce you to your DNA, you're gonna like that guy. You're really gonna like that guy. And by the way, the world needs that guy. So that's what we're able to do, is just invite people in. God created a space for Jimmy Graham that was exactly Jimmy Graham. And now I'm digging it. I'm just fueled all day, every day, what's next? And it just keeps blowing my mind. Even driving out here, I'm just driving and doing my thing and just internalizing, slowing the world down and going, this is pretty cool. You know, but you don't look at that enough, you know, that we get to do this. And while we're doing what we love, we get to save a nation. Man, I was made for that.
Yeah, you've redefined your purpose, but all the things you're saying is like a very conscious effort and introspect and understanding who you are. And I think that's the problem with a lot of men. They're lost and not knowing who they are.
Right.
And once you've accepted whatever ideology or path you commit to, if you're confident in that, it could be intimidating. And this is where, you know, people are insecure in positions. They come out, you get the hate, you get the, oh, what's going on? What do you, you guys are training a militia? Like, what, you guys are doing something extreme because it doesn't fit their model. Because their model is typically modeled specifically in insecurity.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of issues and errors. And I think coming from a military service where we found really defined purpose in that mission, when we were separated from that, you get lost.
Yeah.
And when you redefine yourself and you take on as a individual your own leadership role and leading yourself.
Yeah.
Because maybe you're used to people leading for you.
Yeah.
And it's real comfortable to be a 6'5" IC on a team and just hold the gun and the ladder. But when somebody actually takes it upon themselves in civilian life and realizes, hey man, nobody's going to lead you. You have to lead yourself.
Yeah.
What I've found is this world of preparedness, this world of leadership, of mentorship, is a profound way for especially soft veterans to get involved and give back. It's something that could bring you defined purpose.
And I think once you become a man and start a, you know, and it's funny what that even means, right? Or what is a man? I just did a seminar. It was actually a Christian men's retreat called What is a Man? And I told him, it's not my answer. We're going to come find out what your answer is, but then we're going to share. So we brought everybody in and said, what is that? So you talk about preparedness, you talk about jiu-jitsu, you talk about all these things, and zero of those have anything to do with being a man. Mm. Like nothing, right? So like, what is a man? There's a show out there, Matt Walsh, I think it is, What is a Woman? And there's spoiler alert on the back. He basically asks a very simple question, but he searches the globe looking for an answer, what's a woman? Then he just asks his wife, and it's awesome. So I asked God on this thing, what is a man? And he came back with a very adult male human. And it's like, roger that. So like, what's crazy about that is once I said that out loud, to these guys, people went home in their 50s and 60s, went home and saying, for the first time in my life, I'm not wondering if I'm a man. And I'm like, when did you become an adult? That's a better question. Well, then you became a man. Mm. Okay. So, but then, in time where we taught them at spiritual journaling and took them up on the mountain 24 hours by yourself, we provided the gear, all that stuff. I went up myself as well. And I felt like God was saying, that's not what you're asking me though. You're asking me, what is a strong man? So a strong man, okay, what's a strong man? And I wrote out a version of integrity that I'd memorized. I'm not good at memorization. I have to really work at it. But it was an adult male human, right? So a man with a steadfast adherence to a strict moral or ethical code, right? So a man with integrity is a strong man. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And I kept writing, but that's not what you're asking me either. You're asking me what's a good man. So then I was like, okay, well, so what's a good man? And that would be a man with integrity that aspires to, obviously this is a Christian thing, aspires to be better. Well, what's better? That means follow Jesus Christ. So following Christ is the ethical foundation that built this country. Mm-hmm. There's no arguing about that, right? So the success leaves clues.
Western civilization.
We just stopped doing it, So G.K. Chesterton said this. He said, Christianity's never been proven wrong. It's been proven difficult and left untried. So we left the thing that works and we're wondering why it's falling apart. So there's like the foundation's good, mm-hmm. right? For this country, we just stopped doing it. That thing I just know enough about you to know that you probably grew up, you probably did bad things, but you knew they were bad. You didn't try to blame anybody. Like I did horrible stuff and I knew it was bad. I just did it anyway. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I was 20, mm-hmm. right? So it got me in trouble. Then I had to own it. That's a pretty good recipe. But this whole equity thing that doesn't work. How many times, and I asked this at one of these retreats, is how many times have you toasted a buddy, a fallen buddy into Valhalla?
Yeah, a lot.
Do you believe in Valhalla?
Never.
Right. So why are we doing
it?
Right.
It's almost comical to me.
We want to honor a buddy by toasting him into a place that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And then get snot slinging drunk and throw up in the bushes and just go, do something, cross a line and get in trouble with my wife. Right. And your buddy, if he is in heaven, is going, guys, what are you doing, man? You know, so I'm going to embarrass the community. I'm going to somehow honor my dead buddy. So I said, I'm not doing anymore. So it's like, hey, this would be a better toast. You know what? I don't believe in Valhalla. I do believe if I act right that I will see him again, my buddy Lance. I'll see Lance again and we'll hang out again, right? So I'm gonna get to it and you're invited. Because the dude over there that believes in nothing, he thought we were on this Valhalla kick. You don't even know who's hanging by a thread. Mm-hmm. These tough guys that are killers that we know, they're hanging by a thread.
Yep.
And your words can push them this way or this way. And that guy was hanging by a thread and he goes, okay, I guess we're doing Valhalla. Well, that guy died next week. That means you won't ever see him again.
Yeah.
Right? Due to my faith, you'll never see that dude again.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know what your faith is. And I know that I've heard you talk and I love, was it Kyle? What's his?
Kyle from Undaunted Life.
Yeah. That was an awesome podcast. Yeah. I was like, I'm like a cheer in my hotel room, whatever, but it was a good one.
Yeah. So I grew up Christian. I grew up in the Baptist church, mm-hmm. was baptized very young, Sunday school, all the things. And then, growing up in special operations, like you saw the right and the wrong sides of men that were torn between two worlds, seemingly torn between two worlds. The whole Valhalla kick. It's like, I'm actually half Korean and half Norwegian by blood. So I could actually even make that line in the sand, but most people have no idea what that means. It's all virtue signaling, something they're uncomfortable with because they don't want to instill faith. They don't want to say, I believe in God and that's okay. And somehow that's not good in organizations that go to war and you're ashamed to do that.
Yeah.
Right. I deal with manifesting that myself because part of me, is part of my faith. And this is, I've completely unsolicited, this conversation, but, part of this is like, I want people to do them. I don't have time to police up other people, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to like even preparedness. Like I've stopped trying to shove and cram preparedness down people's mm-hmm. throat. It's like, if you pick up what I'm laying down, then come along with the journey. Like, hey, if you want to go ride with me and my son, come along. But if not, do you. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about faith in a way. because I know a lot of people who have shoved faith down my throat, but I know my beliefs. Mm-hmm. I know where I come from. I know my faith and it's strong. And I know my personal relationship. Where I see a lot of people losing faith mm-hmm. is they lean on everybody else
right.
instead of leaning on themselves and their personal relationship with God. And that's the drama associated with in my life, but you're completely different. You've accepted that, but you've also said it out loud.
Right.
Has that always been the case for
not,
you?
Not at all. I got saved, and you understand what that means. And if I'm hearing you right, you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, because
yeah.
if you didn't, I was going to just totally shotgun you and be like, brother, I'm that guy, if you ever want to have that conversation, because nothing else matters, actually, mm-hmm. if you understand that faith. So letting... letting someone like letting my buddy, Lance, that I believe to be in heaven, letting him be him. Now I understand the magnitude of that, mm. right? It's literally been likened to there will be a day, like everybody talks to God. It's either before you die or after you die, but everybody will talk to him. If I knew you were getting pulled off the dock out, there's going to be a train going that way and that way. By the time I see that, you're going that way. And I could have told you, but I didn't. All of a sudden there's a purpose there, mm. right? So there is that thing. There's so many people that are, have the right to be right, just be you. And I just heard this this sheepdog thing recently, maybe it was last night or maybe it was on the drive up here. It's like, hey, God is whatever you believe, but be that thing if it makes you better. What's better, right? So all of a sudden we've got this, just do you. Well, everybody doing you has got us here, right? Mm-hmm. We left the rule book. There's a map for this for life. There's a creator. There is this book out there that says, this is a history on you and how you live. This is basically the covenant you fall under. So we don't have to sacrifice stuff, but we do have to follow this. Mm-hmm. And when you do, and this is the part that changed my life, is somewhere in this line for Jimmy Graham, I made a conscious decision and said, man, I've screwed up a bunch of people. And everybody I meet from now on will be better having known Jimmy Graham. I don't care if it's this much or an inch or a mile high, right? They will be better. And my entire life changed. Like everything changed. Mm-hmm. Like I just hit 50. I did my 50th birthday and got bombarded. We had this party and there were emails. They made a video. They did all this stuff. Nobody was talking about guns. Nobody was talking about tactics. It was just bombarded with, I'm a better man or woman or husband or wife or you name it because I know you. And that overwhelms you. And that's joy. Like when you experience joy, not happiness, like happiness is riding a jet ski, right? Whatever. But joy will bring you to your knees. And I just had that moment happen. January 2nd was my birthday and I'm changing my marketing. Like it's no longer, hey, come tactical, this and that. It's you come be a better human being. And while you're here, let me teach you how to defend your kids.
Hey guys, if you know Phil Kraft Survival, if you know Mike Force, if you know me, then you likely know about Montana Knife Company. Montana Knife Company was founded by a buddy of mine, Josh Smith, master bladesmith for 30 years. One of the most experienced knife makers in the country. And he's had no compromise and all the integrity because he's making all of his knives. He's made that decision early on, by the way, to make all of his knives made in the USA, manufactured locally in his home state of Montana. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, Montana Knife Company is a hunting knife company first and foremost. Likely the sharpest knives in the market. I mean, you likely need a bleeding control kit if you're going to own a Montana knife, and that's a good problem to have. They sell out instantaneously. But for the first time in the history of his company, because he's gotten ahead, he has stock of your favorite knives, including the Blackfoot 2.0, the Speed Goat, or the Stonewall Skinner. And you could save 10% by using MF10. That's Mike Foxtrot 10, MF10, for 10% off your first order at MontanaKnifeCompany.com.
Yeah, if you go on social media, it's hard to strike a balance between their optimism in the world on day-to-day and personal engagement and then what you're seeing the world vomit mm-hmm. all over social media and really affect. Like I thought social media was an echo chamber. It's actually affecting a lot of people's lives and culture and all these things. And it's much more impactful than we give it credit for. And it's sad.
Yeah.
And, we learned this in preparedness. It's why we teach like the rewilding course is similar to the course that you're talking about. And we have fireside chats talking about trauma and exposure to vulnerability. And what I realized early on, probably 2 or 3 years ago, had nothing to do with preparedness. This whole journey, yeah. A class on tactics has nothing to do with tactics, has everything to do with building people to be better human beings.
Right.
Which in their own lives, whether it's capability, they see some light mm-hmm. and they come away reinvigorated, and they realize they need to make change.
Yeah,
and you see that because it's part of the culture. It's mm-hmm. it's something that people want to belong to, and I think most often men are searching for something.
Yeah,
and when it's faith based, like in your organization, and you have a platform, but then you also have structure, and then you have a moral code, and it's called being a good Christian, man, you got the backing of historical references and history and everything in one book. Hmm. And I think that's compelling. I'm there with you.
Yeah.
I'm not there fully committed to the how you do it,
yeah,
but very similar in how I individually and specifically live my life. But it's also part of the cloth that we were cut from. I want to go back and just back up a little bit to give some context for your background of how you got to this position in the first place. Tell me about a little bit about your upbringing and how you became a Navy SEAL. Like, what was that? What's that path?
So, raised at a Baptist church in Middle America, so Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Man, knucklehead as a kid. So I got saved and then just kind of lost my mind around high school about when you figure out, you know, start seeing girls and all the other influences of drinking and partying and all that kind of stuff. So struggled through high school as a student. Got in some trouble, got in a fight over a girl during senior week, but it landed it, like won the battle, lost the war. So it was a mutual thing, but I hit a kid so hard it broke a bone in his face, which is immediately a felony assault charge.
Ooh.
Right. So now you're talking about big boy stuff when you just turned 18 and you got to ride the system out and do all that. Didn't graduate on time, had to come back and get credits. Now you're the dead man walking in high school. Like, what's he doing here? You know, and everybody's like, oh, the party with the thing. Oh yeah, that guy. So I actually had to get my act together before I could even enlist. But I knew then I needed a challenge, you know, that time going through that process, said, hey, you better pull your head out quick. Didn't come from a bunch of money. We never needed anything, you know, but yeah, we all had that covered, but, didn't have a whole lot of options as far as attorneys. So I took the public defender and it was just an ugly deal, but it scared me enough to say, man, you got to put this energy somewhere. So you come in feeling like, you know, the second class citizens, and then you go into the teams. And all of a sudden, everybody came in on a stack of waivers, right? You won't drink, you won't do this, you won't do that, you won't hit people and stuff. And you're like, and then you meet a bunch of long lost brothers that really were just looking to grow up. Like, I grew up in the Navy, and I came in a little bit later. I was in my 20s when I came in, and just trying to figure out what that was, chasing that version of a man, almost that Elias and Barnes thing from Platoon. And I started, like, the tough guys, the drinkers, I started heading down that road, right? A lot of fights and just punched out a bunch of team guys and all that stuff. And it was just rowdy goodness fun. I don't know that I would have changed it. I just didn't know. I'm very fortunate. And I tell my kids this, I'm very fortunate. I had a near forever mistake, right? With hurting that kid, could have killed him, mm-hmm. right? And I worked out and I did martial arts and I did all this other stuff, you know, and always drawn to that. So my background, Scottish on my dad's side, Japanese on my mom. So the Bushido code and even that kind of stuff was a very alluring to me as a 50-year-old man. Now I just see holes in that because this whole thing of this samurai culture, which I love the concept of, but it's more of a, when you see that play out, I say, play it to the end. Play it to the end is now you've got people that have in Japan that have adult children playing video games in their basement. They pretend they don't exist, you know, because they bring shame on the family. Like, there's just, it's a broken thing. And now they're offing themselves.
Didn't evolve well.
They're killing themselves because of this honor, or what you call honor. It's just a broken system, right? So I had to have life experience to apply all of this stuff to. This stuff my parents were trying to do. I'm like, whatever. This is my understanding of Christians is that you're straight laced khaki pants, like, and you're judging me for drinking McCoors Lights. Peace out, man. You're a weirdo. So I just opted for something else. And then once we got to that part, I think at some point, every man matures into this space where you're like, there's got to be something else, man. And by the way, it's like SEAL teams and hanging out with my buddy, and he's DevGru mobility guy, and I'm heading to the agency, and we're doing all this stuff. Like this can't be it. And there's just drunken people sprayed all over the grass, and we're just up at 3 a.m. He's like, you want to come to church with me? And he's a Catholic, so I go in there, and that was confusing because he didn't even know what we're doing. I'm like, why are we here? He's like, I don't know, we just do this. And I'm like, it's weird to me. And it just wasn't time yet. And then at one point I walked into a church and the dude was talking to me. Like, I've had this happen twice in my life where the world disappears and one thing's happening and it's kind of strange, but it got my attention, right? And it hasn't stopped literally since that moment. It's really, really good. So you can't preach accountability without looking at, you know, at some point that's going to focus back at you. And you're like, I'm a freaking mess. I'm sick of apologizing to people in the morning with vomit all over my shirt.
Did you gain a lot of, operational experience that gave you the ability, the skill sets to kind of proceed with things that you teach at Able Shepherd? Did you feel like your career path and the years that you were in, you accomplished what you wanted to out of the teams? Or did you feel like it was just something else? You were looking for something else and you weren't fulfilled?
I was not fulfilled. And I literally thought I was broken. So I went to sniper school and guys would go out and buy their tricked out rifles and go compete. And I'm like, I'm good. And then they go, you know, jump out of planes and they buy their chute and they go do all that. And I'm like, I'll do it for work, but not. And then scuba dive all over the world. And it's nothing really clicked. And I thought, man, am I broken? Like, how come I'm not digging this stuff? It's cool. And I like it,
yeah,
but I'm not passionate about it.
It didn't define you at the time.
It didn't. Yeah. And then when I went to the agency, and started protecting people, like literally the people, the world skipped tactics. We do skills and then we walk around doing skills, but you didn't do tactics. Tactics is employing those skills correctly. So shooting would be a skill. Go get my gun, get your gun and go get my daughter. That's tactics. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden we got to do tactics and my brain's got to be meshed up with your brain. And why are you even standing like that? That's all got to make sense. So that part really appealed to me. Like the time I talked about CQD and you know, Dwayne gets a bad rap because he's not a SEAL. And that's, and I truly attribute it to that because SEALs are like the hardest people in the world to tell anything, you know, but he was a genius and he brought that in to a community and did so much good, probably than any SEAL that I know for that community. But there was some other stuff going on with being able to work with the agency and being able to work with CQD. But seeing all of that stuff kind of come, I think all of that was practice for what I'm doing now. Like this, now I'm fulfilled. Now my cup is full because it was, we got sold a false bill of goods that was, you can either have a family or you can operate. Yeah. Or you can have a community, or it's one or the other, but you can't have both. Yeah. And that thing was like, well, that didn't fit because I told myself at a young age, I'm going to be a good father. Like, well, what does good mean? I'm going to be a godly man and raise children and have them model things for them that are sustainable, where they're contributing and they're part of the solution, not the problem, right? Mm. And all that started coming together and crashing down in my head. And I'm like, okay, I got some choices to make. And I don't drink anymore. I don't consider beer drinking, but I think, you know, for like hard alcohol. Yeah, right. That's funny. That's when a river runs through it. He says something about like fishing and drinking don't mix in Montana, but every Montana knows that drinking beer is not drinking, right? Beer is not considered drinking. But anyways, I just watch what I'm doing because it's accountable. Because we are, if you're going to be better having known me and vice versa, there's a bigger cost to it. I heard you and Kyle talking about this, that 3 o'clock in the morning, I've gotten calls at 3 a.m. where you answer the phone and somebody goes, how do you talk to God? And it's a buddy from high school or the teams. I know at that moment, I'm not going back to bed. It's time to put coffee on, right? Because that dude's sitting on the edge of his bed with a pistol in his hand, right? Yeah. That, why'd my phone ring? And that's what you really got to think about that. Because if you're that smart aleck and the tough guy and the know-it-all, your phone doesn't ring. You just get the news that, you know, your senior chief isn't around anymore, right? And you're like, dang it, why didn't you call me? Brother, I can give you 50 examples of why I didn't call you, right? Mm. So all of a sudden that thing starts, I call it the currency of trust. That currency of trust, there's a movie called Open Range. Have you seen it? The cowboy movie? It's so good. Kevin Costner, but this young kid's cheating at cards. And Bobby Duvall looks over there and Kim Costner just gets, he is like, I'm done, throws his cards down and leaves. And he's like, hey, a man's trust is worth more than a hand of cards, right? And that is such a powerful line, because one little thing, and you know this, those unforgiving communities like the Spec Ops community, if you violate trust once, you might not ever give it back. They don't understand grace.
Yeah.
They know you screw up, you're dead to me. Like if it's a big enough screw up and you know the deal with somebody's wife, with lying, with this, whatever, you'll never get it back. Yeah. And you can think of those guys right now. You're like, oh, that's like so-and-so. Nobody ever forgave him. Done deal, right? Yeah. So it's very, very cut and dry. So that little screw up wasn't a little screw up. It was a big screw up, because now you don't get the phone call anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And now he doesn't have anybody in his Rolodex. That's dating us, right? What a Rolodex is. But his Rolodex has zero dudes. When he flips to the 3 a.m. and I need to be vulnerable with somebody, he's got nobody. Mm. Roger that. Well, then his pistol shows up for him, you know, so that's not good.
It's interesting that what you said about the agency job that we both had, it does, what I realized in our specific jobs and roles, it was a big burden of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you either sank or swam. Mm-hmm. Right, you were either willing to do the job, and you were the guy amongst maybe a handful of guys, depending on where you were operating, and that weight bore responsibility, but also changes in tactics and changes in behavior. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of the guys who weren't very good at that job specifically, which is very few people that I served with there, but they had taken those bad habits from active service and just looked at it as another opportunity to do those same bad habits.
Yeah.
In fact, amplified everything.
Yeah.
Because now we could drink as much as we want. We could do whatever we want. And then I saw the liability increase, and I also saw their personal burdens increase because now there wasn't a lot of team guys to decompress with. There wasn't outlets that you normally would have with the teams or your troop chief or your troop commander or troop sergeant major telling you to get off your butt and let's fixing everything for you. And so a lot of those guys self-destructed potentially in that role and job. I remember I was doing a stint when I got ripped out of Yemen. I did a stint in Erbil, and a young SOC kid killed himself in the chew next to me. Laptop in his lap. I mean, me and another guy went in there and examined the whole scene before the investigators came. But laptop in his lap, bottle of Jack Daniels at his feet, wife was on Skype, likely infidelity and all these things that he had taken from service and just translated into that job. A lot of guys from our backgrounds, if they live in that culture, especially if they transition into civilian life where they don't even have purpose anymore and they're lost, that's how they find the end of a barrel. So how I know you, because part of how I know you is your reputation, which is a very good reputation, and also some of the things that you did in Benghazi, Libya, because you were there, you ripped out on your rotation as per normal standard operating procedure during the actual events that took place September 11, 2012, but you were a team lead there.
Yeah.
How was that overall experience for you? And then why did it lead to you actually stepping away? Because up until that point, you were a career kind of guy. I mean, you had done, you were in the SEALs, and then you came over to GRS and then did a lot of things. You're a TDC instructor. I mean, you were the guy teaching the operators that were going downrange doing it. What was it about that specific event? And then why did you walk away?
So I tell people I've had two of the coolest jobs on the planet for a single guy with no kids, meaning being a SEAL team operator and then also being not only CIA, but CIA. You know, CIA has GRS. Within GRS, there's the TDC, that you know what that is, tactical development course that everybody has to go through and vet. Well, within that, there's the SPT, Special Projects Team, right? The instructors for that, yes, they're teaching, but they're also vetting. They're evaluating those people. Not only can I do the job, I can make people that do the job, right? So people say, like, those who can do this, that can't teach. Well, what about those guys who can do both? You know, those guys are an asset. So not only can I go in there and do the job and deploy it about once a year while training, then on the seventh year that I worked there, was all in Libya, you know, so on the rotation, 2 months on, 2 months off. So those guys are a huge asset and I loved it. And, not to boast, but I was good at my job. You know, I was good in the SEAL teams. I was good at this and I was good at that and I dug it and it was awesome, but it just started, you know, losing purpose. When I had kids, it was, and I love, out of all the stuff that I did and all the cool skill sets that we have, protecting people, for some reason, the tactics of that really made sense. And we talked about this in the hall where some people go over there and they might get drunk at night because you can. People are like, no, you can't. No, you totally can. Right?
Totally can.
And there's craziness. You can do all that stuff. Well, I just didn't. And I remember one particular case officer, we were on a meet and this was a female and somebody offered me some tea and she cried and doing all this stuff. And I threw it in the bushes and she's like, you don't like tea? And I was like, I'm not drinking tea today. And she goes, well, why not? And I was like, well, because if I wanted to get, it's only me. Everybody here, there's guns all over, but I'm the only guy here to protect you until I make a call. So if I wanted to get to you, I'd poison me. Mm. And she was like, well, everybody else just kind of relaxes and I'm not in charge of them. I'm in charge of me. I'm here.
I got one job.
Yeah. At three, if this happens at 3 a.m, I will be 100% when I pop out of bed, right? I'm not going to be on Ambien. I'm not going to be drinking. I'm not going to be whatever. I was actually studying from Liberty University. I have my laptop open in the cafeteria. Be like, what's up with Hefe, man? Weird dude over there with I'm writing papers, man. I'm trying to make myself better. So the family would be the short answer is when that happened, I was like, you know, I told myself a long time ago, you know, again, you're preaching integrity, but you said you're going to be a good dad. And you said you were going to be a good husband. And your wife, man, she's really been along for the ride and she's made sacrifices. I was an idiot. I moved us to Montana. We agreed. We talked about it, but we didn't really know what we're doing. You're going to move her to Montana where we have no support and you're going to deploy. It's not a good plan, man. It's like just an idiot.
It breaks well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, we had gotten married in Montana as a destination wedding. I sold the whole thing. It was all a plan because I felt called to Montana. And then we moved down to Castle Rock and it was time to kind of turn the page. And most guys in that position, they say, you know, I'm going to do this one, maybe one more. We make good money. And I say that loosely. You make decent money because you got to cover the amounts you're not working.
More than active duty.
Right, right. More than active duty. And the thing with that is you got your freedom. So if you got to deploy for 2 months and they didn't call you, like literally they didn't call you for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And like, I would forget the code to the door. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, and go to the agency and be like, where's the office at again? Like whatever. Cause it was just so long, 2 months, whatever. And that was amazing. So you get your freedom. You get to do this sexy job. And when I say sexy, I'm talking, you get onto a plane without going through the airport. You fly to a different country and you get off. You don't go into the airport. Your buddies are in a ballistic vehicle and they hand you a machine gun at the bottom of the stairs. It's pretty cool, man.
It was the closest depiction of 13 Hours of Mugazi in the movie that I literally was like, oh, this is going to be actually a slight good depiction of the job.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of debate, obviously, and you would know better than I about the actual events. But when the guy gets off and then the dude hands him a pistol and a radio.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they fly you business class. This is so awesome. And all this stuff. When I landed in Yemen, my team leader, I think it was, I can say his call sign, Itchy, was my team leader. And he hands me a Glock and a radio. And he's like, I'm like, oh, you know, OJT, like, what are we doing? We're going to train. He's like, no, we're going to work. Yeah. Like, I'll brief you in route. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God.
This just got real.
This got real. And there's no QRF. There's no Rangers. There's no support. There's nothing. There's
got each other.
And you and three other dudes. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a game changer. I thought the same thing. I was very impressed with the job. Yeah. And it was very fulfilling as a specific role.
Yeah.
I thought like, man, this things could go bad and we have to be squared away. Yeah. And I appreciated that for once.
Well, even like, you know, with Abel Shepherd, our motto is take care of one another. Man, when you get out there, that's all you got.
Yeah.
You got to take care of each other because nobody else is coming, at least not, you know, for plan. And there were plans, and with 13 hours, everybody's like, oh, they should have had a plan where they were playing Cowboys. We always had a plan. They just didn't come. Like you called, the plan was I call you, you call them, they send them, and then we're all saved.
Nobody
you just
paid.
Didn't do your part, right?
Yeah.
So everybody, it wasn't a secret thing. Yes, it's a secret as far as a secret facility, the annex was, but the people there at the embassy and the consulate and all that, none of that. There's game plan. There must be. There's volumes that have to be fulfilled before you even get permission to be in the country. So that was all there. So seeing that, and then the honest answer to get back to your question is that at one point I'm over there, I'm the first guy out of my seat. Like I'm going to be there early. I'll stay there late. I don't care, whatever. And I'm not the guy, by the way, I met with two vets this week that are looking to be employed and all this other stuff. And they're talking about the guys that, you know, this, some guys hit overseas. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come home. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because they know they're not doing the thing.
Yeah.
They don't want to face the truth that, man, their son is effeminate because he's raised by mom and grandma. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you're not home, man. It's like, try breaking into my house. I got an AR and I got this and that. Brother, you're gone 7 months out of the year. That's the home to break into. You got a wife with three kids that's overwhelmed and the dude's not there. That's the house to break into. So I realized quickly, I need my neighbors and they don't have a background. And if they don't know how to protect my family, it's my fault. TDC instructor for 6 years and did all this stuff and SEAL teams and all that. And they don't know how to hold a gun. I'm like, I can fix that. Right. Mm-hmm. So then we started a program to train these people to protect my kids while in Sunday school and church and my neighborhood and all that. And now it's hundreds of people that are trained. And you came over and did a tour, man. How much of that was from TDC? They're clearing houses. They're shooting. Yeah. It's long range. It's short range.
They look like soccer dads that could operate.
Right. And you know what? When we met at the range and I said, hey, are you free on your way to dinner with mama? Swing by. So when I left, I'm like, hey man, Mike Glover's going to swing by. I need 10 dudes. And boom. Like they came from their house. We didn't stage that. We didn't know you were going to say yes,
insane.
Right?
And no rehearsals. Got there,
right?
Just
there's
got
no
it
rehearsals.
On.
Here's the plan on me. And I say the parking lot's not the place for a training session. The parking lot of an active shooter event is not the place to train. Mm-hmm. Right? Now it's time to work. Just like when you got off the plane, they didn't train you. Mm-hmm. Hand you a gun. Sit on me. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing that now we're replicating and saying, if you don't have a plan, you're wrong. I've been to Uvalde. I've met with those dudes. Man, they're dark. They're dark, right? That's the coward of Broward County. Coward of Broward's not a good handle for a man. Here's the deal. We all thought he knew how to do this, and he's been lying for years. And then the truth showed up, right? Uvalde. We all thought, they said, people go, were they trained for that, Jimmy? I go, no. Well, how can you say that? Because the dude looked with tears in his eyes and said, we weren't trained for this. And I'm like, I know. I saw the video. And I heard, it was one of the best commentaries I saw. And then when we broke it down, we did Uvalde versus Tennessee and why they were as such.
The contrast.
Right. Yeah. And it was feed the front. It was the stuff that we know. It's like somebody, you can, if you want to feed the front, this is what it looks like. On me and take a step. If you want to feed the rear, get hand sanitizer. Everybody knows what needs to happen down that hall. Then you're finding work. What are you doing, man? So that's where it fell apart, and then nobody could muster up the sack to head that way. When everybody knew that was the problem. It's like, okay.
You narrowly focused your mission statement to very specifically focus on protecting children.
Yes.
And that seems like a slight shift from the original concept.
Yeah.
But it seems definitively very needed in our society now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I imagine people who don't know you, like I know you, and who don't know your program, like I know your program, would say, this seems extreme. Why would you ever need to be trained to save your children or to save kids? Why would a dad who goes to work, who drops his kid off at school, ever be concerned with all of these things that we're talking about? What would your answer be to them?
Every one of those places said it'll never happen here, including Benghazi, Libya. Like literally they were executing the generals of the tribes, and all this is going on. People are dying. We're losing, you know what a tripwire is. If there's a tripwire, it means we got to watch these tripwires. And if they go, it's time to go home. Pack up everything, burn everything, go home. Well, one of those tripwires is we lose access to the airport. Well, we lose it, but then we're like, oh, we hire some guys and we go get it back. Or, no, we're good. It never happened, right? We had already tripped
you
so many wires.
You had criteria there.
You're like, brother, it's time to go, man. It's time to go, right? And it just, okay, well, it got you. So that's what happened. So like all of that stuff going on is a huge, huge deal. You're seeing tripwires right now in this nation. Everybody knows. Everybody feels that they don't want to say it because say it requires work, right? If you say it out loud and you're a man of integrity, that means you need to start changing things, but we're kind of comfortable. So if you're not seeing that people are targeting children, both born and unborn, you're not looking, right? You're like, I don't want to look. Why? Because freaking Yellowstone's on. Okay, man, you've chosen your deal, but I'm just saying I wasn't built that way. So I'm looking and I'm calling it out, and watch, and this is going to happen, and I hate saying this out loud, it's just the truth. The next school shooting, I'm going to be on the news again. Why? Because I'm always on the news, man. I've been on Hannity and Huckabee and blah, 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 all this other stuff. I've written up what future of schools looks like. I've done all of this. I've got processes for everything, and I'm proving it time thousands of people, right? And they don't even remember me until there's a dead kid on the floor. And everybody goes, call Jimmy again. Like I just went for the 1 year anniversary of Uvalde, was asked to go with the senator, the representative. We go from Uvalde, from Texas. Will you meet me out there? Will you go to this thing? Because it was the year. You got to do something. It's the year. It was a dog and pony, man. We took pictures. I talked for 3 minutes and I went home.
Wow.
I'm like, what's the plan, man? What are we doing? And it's funny. I had a stack of documents saying, because I knew I was limited. They're about to cut me off and the time was almost up. I'm like, this is how we build schools. We got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do the process. And it's easy and it's proven. We've done it. We've done it. In the very bottom, I had my Bible. I go, if we don't get back to this, we don't have a foundation to build on if we're going to lose this country. And they're like, thank you, Mr. Graham. You'll never be back. They didn't say that, but it was just,
you know,
because they know the truth. The truth is, man, you remove the truth. So that Christian manifesto, don't plant your flag on freedom. I was a big freedom guy. Plant your flag on truth. Why? Because if you know the truth will set you free. But if you got freedom and you take away the truth, we're heading to slavery. We're halfway there now, right? So, and everybody's like, there's all these books about it. Man, there's one book about it. It's called The Bible. This must happen. It's not, well, Christian guys, this can't happen. What are we going to do? It must happen. But what I'm in charge of is what am I going to do while it happens? My answers take care of one another. Again, in the Bible, James says, love one another. What does that mean? It means I'm going to show up at your house. Right? Why? Because your kids are in danger. And my phone rang. Right? So that's the thing you got to earn. You got to earn it every day over a lifetime. And one stupid thing could get me off your list. So I do less stupid things.
Hey guys, this podcast is brought to you by the U.S. Concealed Carry Association. You know we're big fans of survival, and survival always depends on one question. How prepared are you? Just like we work to be prepared to survive any situation, the USCCA trains you to be prepared and feel confident as a gun owner, especially if you ever need to use it in self-defense. I've been a member for over 3 years because not only do I get access to their online Protector Academy, where I can learn from experts on critical aspects of survival, such as how to shoot accurately under pressure, and how to prepare for family and home defense planning, but I also get self-defense liability insurance in case I'm ever involved in a dangerous incident. There's a reason 800,000 American gun owners like myself trust them. So check them out at uscca.com/FCS to claim your risk-free benefits right now, as well as a free gift when you sign up. That's uscca.com/FCS. Thanks, guys.
Let's talk most dangerous course of action. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk most likely, and likely might be most dangerous. What do you think, as you see all the things unfolding? I mean, right before I came here, because I had to extend my timeline, I apologize for that, but I was doing a video on preparing for a Black Swan event.
Yeah.
And specifically, I positioned it to where I'm like communicating about, hey guys, this is principle-based. Mm-hmm. There are a whole bunch of details. There's organizations like yours, Tim Kennedy's Sheepdog Response. There are places to go, but here are some of the things that I think about. And the reason I put that content out is because I'm literally thinking about that day to day as my Sergeant Major brain starts receiving information and I'm doing battlefield analysis. Mm-hmm. And I realize we haven't prepped the environment.
Yeah.
We are years behind where we need to be. And individual people need this information, and they could do whatever they want with it. I hope they take it and inspires them to go to programs like yours, yeah. Go to programs like mine, but do something. If you're looking at most dangerous course of action as you see the world unfold, what does that look like for you?
Most dangerous, I'd say it's neck and neck with our children as they mature and with a terrorist attack. Right. So there's a book out there right now. It just came out last month called The Attack. Are you aware of it?
Mm-mm.
I forget the dude's name, but it just came out and it's a hypothetical. And this was cool because I'm writing my book. It's supposed to come out this year. This guy, 3 months from writing it to publishing it to on Amazon, I was like, that's impressive. But what it is, it's a Hamas-style attack. It's a fiction book about mm-hmm. a Hamas-style attack using a lot of these factual things. And he places it right in the middle of this country. He says, you overflow the borders with these people. And everybody knows this. This is not like hypothetical. Everybody knows that killers are entering this nation yeah. in droves, right?
Yeah.
But then and where the book picks up is it activates. And there's thousands of uncoordinated attacks because they don't need management. They just say yeah. kill until you can't kill, right? So they just start killing. But the concept is this. On the first day, you attack public spaces. So then all the police rush and they say, go home. And then the second day, they attack homes, like big you know, development homes. And on the third day, it's infrastructure. Something like that. We were so busy focused on us, we forgot the world hates us. And in 2020, we first did our podcast and all that stuff. We were so internal with all of our stuff going on. And then the government and what's going on in the corruption, all the distractions, we forgot that people still hate us and want us dead. So that's a problem. But then in doing that, imagine, here's the other one is in this space of active shooter response. And we call it active shooter readiness, because you should be ready with a plan, is imagine being a 9-year-old boy and your dad convinced you, if not convinced you, at least allowed you to cut off your genitalia when you were a kid because you just wanted to play with dolls, right? But now you're 18 and you're pissed. And you're not just pissed at him, you're pissed at the world, right? You're not going to take it out on him alone. Maybe him and the school, maybe him and all those entitled kids with penises that are going to have kids someday. Yeah. That's real, man.
Just happened in
Tennessee.
That's
coming. Yeah, that's coming in a wave. These people that have been lied to and lied to and lied to. Why? Because I didn't want the truth. I wanted to believe a lie because it was comfortable for now. And everybody knows it's wrong. But I just walked into a commissioner's meeting after this whole thing that I stood for recently to stand to protect children. And you should have seen the amount of law enforcement and our leaders that were just bowing at the knees of this Pride Fest coordinators. And if they want to do a homosexual thing, okay. Go big. When they got kids involved and started tipping them for dancing, and then they had sections where only kids and drag performers could go, and they had breasts falling out, and they're fake, but kids don't know that. And kids are coming up and putting dollars. I'm like, the answer is no. So I got
this is in Colorado.
This is in Colorado.
So you went to actual commission thing where you were speaking and
yes,
talk.
Yes.
How'd that go down?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, one, I wasn't even invited because they knew it wasn't supposed to be public. But then when I was listening to my house because it was live, I'm 5 minutes from downtown, I heard, jumped in my truck, drove over there, and you should have seen the faces when I walked in the room, like, oh crap, he's here, right?
Jimmy's
and
here.
They said, oh, right. I mean, the lawyer leaps up in my face and he's like, and I go, sit down, you, and I'm screaming in his face. And the guy's like, next year you're not invited. And he's yelling all this stuff. And literally one of our commissioners was like, Mr. Graham, if you can't be civil, we're going to ask you to leave. And I'm like, I had the floor, Abe. And he was like, oh crap. Like his true colors came out because they're just like, oh, 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 whatever. And I was like, I live here. Do you understand that? Like, I get to live here and I get to stand. I can say whatever I want. It was a public event, which means public means me. Mm-hmm. Your motto said, you belong here. That means me. I literally live right across the street next to the church and the school, by the way, where you're holding this event. And it was amazing, but nobody looks at, who's got time to look at the truth, right? That's really happening. And they're prepping again next year, and we'll do something again next year. But if people don't stand, and it's, this is a horrible joke, but it's very true, brother. It can't be rape if it's consensual. You know what I mean? You're part of the problem. It's like, they're not raping you. You're going along with it. It's like, no, man, this is rape. Like, no, back up.
Yeah.
Back up off the kids, period. But when a man gets 70 plus people, and they had SWAT on standby. Like, sheriff knew I was coming. The police chief knew I was coming. Commissioners knew I was coming. Everybody knew I was coming. They also knew, for the first time ever in my life, because I felt called from God to do this, I said, guys, I'm feeling led to not be armed. We can legally be armed at the fairgrounds. But I think it'd be contradictory to our case because we got people gunning for us. There's cops everywhere. I'm not carrying. And I'm inviting you to stand in quiet strength. And when you get spit on and yelled at, I need you to stand there, right? Mm-hmm. I won't let you get brutalized, right? I'll get involved at that point. And we did. And the guys did. And I was so proud. But I had to walk over. Guys were getting hot, daddy mad, because people are in their face and yelling all stuff. I just walk over, grab their shoulders. Man, love you, brother. You're doing great. Just stand there. We're almost out of here. And the SWAT team's over there on standby around the corner in their thing. And they know us. And they're like, this is horrible. Oh my gosh, we're going to have to arrest Jimmy. And we didn't break the law. And they were like, this other side's like, he should have been drug out of there. Like, he didn't break the law. You broke the law. And now they're under investigation. There was a kid that was sexually assaulted. All this stuff.
And this is stuff the government in your community is facilitating.
Yeah, they're funding it. It's like, oh man, what this is. I tell my wife, hey, you're trying to, you know why you're so frustrated? Because you're trying to make sense of nonsense. This is nonsense. This must happen. But what are you going to do while it happens? I'm going to say I disagree. And 70 people are going to join me. We're going to take off our shirts. We're going to jackets, and we're going to have a shirt that says stand and protect children. On the back, it's going to say Jesus loves you and so do I. And 70 plus dudes do that. Mm. And they didn't know what to do with us. Why? Because we didn't engage. And they're screaming and yelling, blah, blah, blah. They got purple hair and they got, you know, overweight kids doing stuff. Okay, man, have your party. But they just didn't know what to do. And I have had politicians calling me like, that was brilliant. They don't know what to do with you. Mm. One, because your background. Two, because your thing. And three, you didn't engage. Like, they just sat there and just showed their true colors. And you guys just stood firm in strength. And it was amazing.
Disruption. I mean,
yeah.
Man.
But again, like we talked about that, all of that. So we talk about the SEAL teams and we talk about, you know, the GRS and even the time after, like Blackwater, I mentioned that, you know, all that was practice for right now.
Yeah.
It just means that we've got buddies that aren't around anymore.
Yeah.
That means that we're carrying the torch, period. Because their kids are still around, but their grandkids are still around. This isn't a light thing. It reminds me of the end of Private Ryan. Brother, who else is going to do it? Right? If they're alive, they could do it. They're not alive. It's on us. This is ours. Like, I've never worn dog tags, but figuratively, there's a lot of dog towns around my neck, right? Mm. That I'm representing by living a moral and just life. And if we could all live a moral and just life, we wouldn't need big government. So I really think just, and you know this terminology, destabilize the region. I was watching Lioness. Have you seen that show? Mm-hmm. It's like, and Nicole Kidman's next to Zoe Saldana, and they're driving, and she goes, the only thing that makes sense to me is they're trying to destabilize the region so they can come back and my head pops up like that. That's exactly what's happening. Because nothing else makes sense. If your goal is to destabilize the United States because we're in the way, it's a perfect recipe. Mm. You know, this whole trans, the thing, go after their kids. Why? Because it just stirs the pot. And then you need a bigger government to have any kind of order. You have to, right? But if everybody had some kind of moral injustice like they did, and it was Christianity, you didn't need it. Everybody just did the right thing. Like, I just come over and help you because it's the right thing to do.
Are you going to get more involved in politics? Can you see yourself potentially getting more involved? It seems like everybody that I know with our backgrounds that's got involved has been very, how do I put this, suppressed in their potential.
Yeah.
And it seems like what you're doing is free market fighting for it more than if you were involved in the system.
I'm already involved in politics, and so are you, by the way. Mm-hmm. If you define it this way, to me, because politics has become this dark word, politics to me means the policies that govern our lives, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a pastor and you don't want to be involved in politics, close your Bible, because that is the policy that governs our lives, period, right? So if all of a sudden you say, yeah, we should be, we were out defending our country, and that's noble, and we were raising a family, we were starting a business, but where we dropped the ball is we took our eye off of education. We took our eye off of politics and the structure. It's a good structure. It just got raped. right? Mm-hmm. And we let it. You know, even our forefathers said, if this thing goes sideways, it's because we allowed it, right? So we allowed it. So all of us need to get back into politics. And how can you best serve politics? Just from what I know of you, keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing, but walk into what you just did. You just told me, walk into that school and say true words boldly. Mm-hmm. But one, know the truth, and the truth will set you free. If you go in there half-cocked and you start telling lies, not knowing it, well, this is this and that, that'll fail you. But if you walk in and say the truth and say, here's the deal, you know, and I've heard you say this on a podcast recently, where you give the guy a look, which means I'll kill you if you hurt my kid. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the deal. Like, and not I'll kill you, but it's, there is an unspoken deal when I drop off my kids at school. Mm-hmm. They're alive. I want them back alive. Mm-hmm. Do you understand me? Well, I'm not sure how to do that. That's why I train my kids school for free. Right? It's my job to
protect. Are they receptive of that, by the way?
They are.
Awesome.
Yep. And so are other schools, and more than you would think now, because more people are saying it is my job.
They're
and
waking there
are
up.
Kids, you know, and the children, both born and unborn, are under attack. Well, who's going to protect them? And I'm like, this guy, right here, right? And he goes like, and it's funny because the way that happened was at a Christmas party, and I said, hey, you know, we've got this four-phase thing, and there's a process, and I believe in it. And one of the assistant principals or one of the administrators was in the program. And I said, the people now that are there, could they pass just the second phase? And that's just shooting a movement with a pistol. It's not very complex, and you'd recognize it immediately, but we just have standards. And he goes, yeah, I think they would. I go, cool. Let me evaluate them. And if they pass, I'll make a donation to the next fundraiser. And if they don't pass, I'll train them for free. And all the dads were like, sounds pretty good, you know, Jake. And he was like, oh. So they came through, failed miserably, and now we train them for free. Mm-hmm. But who wins? The kids. Right?
Absolutely.
My kids are safer because I took time out of my day and made sure that they apply to standard, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's very efficient. So when you talk about that SEAL teams to GRS to all of the, even the mess in Blackwater, all of that stuff. And then you become a dad and you have children and you see, man, the real attack's over here. Mm-hmm. You know, that one might happen, but this was in tactics. We talk about definites and maybes. Well, there might be a gun here. There's definitely a dude shooting. So just deal with that first. Right. So let's deal with that and then deal with the maybes. The definite is they're going after our kids and their hearts and their worldview, meaning the lens they see their world through, right? And if you can change that, you change everything. You break the system. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I don't like the music, so I kick the jukebox and it goes to the next song. You kicked it so hard, the music stopped. And the other nations know this. If they can disrupt it, just like the EMP or something like that, we'll do the rest. Like, we'll do the rest to each other. Like, you don't need to.
Yeah, we'll police ourselves up.
If I was a terrorist, we have to think like this. If I was a terrorist, I wouldn't attack us right now, because when we get attacked, we unite. But I would stir the pot. Why? Because if you stir the pot, we'll kill each other. Right? That's bad. That's really, really bad. So I think those biggest threats is, yes, there's always that looming terrorist attack, but it would be from within, because why not? Because I just heard this morning that that boats are landing on California, the beaches we used to train in, they're letting them in. Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't matter. Oh, we'll put up barbed wire. Cool. We'll just take a boat. And they're dropping people off. They're walking right up the beach that you're sunbathing on.
Yeah.
And nobody's doing anything about it, right?
Yeah.
So that is a potential threat that's already here. And then also those children that are coming up from within, and they were lied to. Mm. And they should be mad. And if you're a patriot and you're pissed because your country is being dismantled in front of you, you should be. Right. And if you don't know what grace is and what truth is and what your place in this world is, you might act out and be part of the problem. But there is a way to fix it. It just might not be the way you like. So if you say, okay, back to the original plan, back to the founding fathers built a structure, let's get back to it. And that does include Christ. So getting back to that and sell out and raising our kids to truths that they can grab onto at 3 a.m. and giving them those people, planting people around them that they can call in 3 a.m. Right. There's this understanding of God is this, it usually comes from your father. That is the first thing. And then once you mature, you decide where it comes from. But I screwed up, my dad's going to kill me. Or I screwed up, I need to call my dad, right? Mm. That's what I instill in them. And I tell them every single night, and they repeat it back to me. I love you. I love you. I'm proud of you. You're a good kid. I love being your dad. Thank God for you. I'm always here for you. I love you always and forever. And they say, no matter what. Every single night before we pray. Why do I say that every single night? Because when she's 17 or 18 or 19, she makes a bad decision. She's sitting on the curb and she's like, oh man, I messed up. I need my phone to ring. And I hope what pops into her head is no matter what. He said, no matter what. Maybe that actually means no matter what. And then my phone rings. Or she calls somebody else and it ends up bad. So it's just a way bigger deal. It's all connected. This world needs leaders. And I know a bunch of them, right? So that whole collaboration piece we're talking about, If you use adventure, and I did a, and this would be a whole other podcast, I did a 12,000 mile motorcycle. That's how I got my BMW, actually, to honor my buddy, SEAL Chief Lance Vaccaro. When he died, we got sponsored by BMW because we rode to Alaska and back for like a fundraiser kind of thing. And we had stops along the way, 31 days, and it was unbelievable. But on that, I saw this adventure piece and I saw what it did for the people on it. Like they didn't want it to be over. And then we all became, you know, tight and whatever. So we've been doing these adventures and taking people out. And then you realize, man, this is a big freaking deal. Mm-hmm. Like if you hit the right buttons, meaning you get to the core of it and you start with this Christ-centered thing and you make them, I want to say behave, but be decent, right? And they go, man, I like this guy better than that other guy. Like the guy that started the ride is not the guy that finished the ride. Mm-hmm. And now we do them all the time, actually. We do like these 9 days backcountry discovery routes, BDRs. But last year we did the first one because I started bringing my son. He's 6 years old. He's in my truck and we're supporting him. It means we're cooking, we're doing the thing, but he's with me. And because I had this covenant agreement, everybody's just acting right, doing the thing. And I can just see, like when you're sitting there with a group of guys and you got your hands in your pockets and you see your son walk over, look around, put his hands in his pocket, look at your feet, widen his stance. You're like, oh man, he's studying us. Mm. That's a big responsibility. Then he did another one when he was 9. And then other dads go, hey, I'm thinking about bringing my son. I go, how about we kank the adult one and we just do a kids one this year? And we did it and it was so good that we've kanked them all together. Next year, we're going to do 2 kids ones, one for 4 days, one for 5 days. And you see these kids coming alive and they're desperate for adventure. And you look up and so are the parents, you know? And so we facilitate it. We bring in camera crews. We do all this, but it's goodness. It's just awesome. Mm. And you look at them and you're like, man, we're going to be okay. You know, at least they are. Because the world's going to need light and it's going to come from these guys. Mm. And then you realize, because you brought up social media, the world, everybody gets their information off these phones. So I get it, how destructive social media is. I also get that I keep up with my nieces and nephews all across the country. Mm. I also get that I post devotionals almost every day. I also get when there's a victory and I'll post that I had a podcast with you. People will know it. I know people are praying for me right now. Why? Because I asked this morning on social media, right? Mm. So all of that stuff, if you know who Dave Ramsey is, the financial guy, remember he held up a brick. He was talking about money and he was like, money's like this brick. He goes, I can throw it through that plate glass window, or, you know, or I can build a, you know, a hospital. Brick doesn't care, right? I've used that for guns. Like I can go rob a bank or I can win a war to save this nation. Gun doesn't care, right? Mm-hmm. It's about the people. And if people use social media for good, it's unbelievably good. And if people are evil, then it's unbelievably evil, right? But if you say, I'm going to stay off of it, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm just going to stay off altogether. Well, you just gave the mic over to evil. Mm-hmm. And that's all your kids are hearing. So no, I'll be using social media and I'm learning how to use it because it's not my thing. But you know, God bless these guys because they do. You know what I mean? So this message is going to get out. But it blows my mind that if we don't get teams put back together, and I don't know if you did this when you, as an entrepreneur when you started, it was SEAL teams, it was GRS teams, everything was teams. And I launched a business as a Lone Ranger and hacked my way through the jungle for now 12 years, right? I'm like, what was I thinking? Like I needed this guy and this guy and this guy and the financial and the spreadsheet and the media and all this other stuff. So as we're starting to figure that teams thing back out, we're growing and it needs to happen. There needs to be collaboration. Why? Because if we, and everybody's like, well, I don't want to compete. Brother, we could fill up every range in this country and we'd have to build more. Yeah. That's just the deal. Because once
I'm not in competition with anybody.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not competing. I'm collaborating. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying try to keep up. Why? Because it makes me go harder. Mm-hmm. Let's just go. So that's what we're doing.
I as we close this out, I would love to do an Able Shepherd conference, maybe focused on active shooting responses and kind of your program.
Yeah.
I just talked to Dee Dee, who you just met in there holding my boy. She runs kind of the business development and training side for us. But if that's something you're open to, I'd love to throw the dart and hit a specific calendar day.
Absolutely.
To get you and your guys out here, because I think our community would benefit from it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's crazy because good companies, I see this with Tim Kennedy, I see this with you, I see this with Phil Kraft and like-minded friends. We're building these things, these apparatuses, but we should spend more time, at least a partition time, deliberately campaigning to collaborate.
Yeah.
And we'll make each other's communities better for it. So I know my guys are teaching up in the location that you got, which I think is awesome. I told them that, like, run that past Jimmy, coordinate with him because it's important. And then there's just something magical about that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Abel Shepherd office in this building, you know, and start building and collaborating. There's no sense in not doing that,
because
that's what we need. Your program is not my program, and people would benefit from both.
Yeah. That's the same thing. Like the once police and good folks within the community realize this, and I was on a nine news Denver, and this guy was trying to walk me into a corner saying that some, so you're saying that you and police are going to be like running and gunning in the street. And I'm like, hey, listen, I don't need authority to support police. Like if they needed me, I would be there, and they have the choice. They want trained or untrained. Well, under what authority? I'm like, under the Constitution. I'm a man free on the earth, right? And if I see a cop dying, I'm going to go help him, period. And he lost his mind. He didn't know how to register that. I'm like, okay, well, you don't have to, man. That's not your calling, but it's mine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a cop, by the way. Like if you're a protector, it just means to get to them, you got to go through me. So if you would place yourself in between, fill in the blank and say to get to them, that's what we did. That's all that our entire job was, to get to them, you got to go through me. But people don't understand the principles of protection. We would call it this: where are you supposed to be? Between the package and the greatest threat. Civilians don't really know that, so I just said, to get to them, you got to go through me. Well, what if we go in the door, you go left, I go right? What's your body saying? Well, to get to Jimmy, you got to go through me. What's mine? To get to Mike, you got to go through me. That, it's just so easy to teach that. Like, we have a, we teach entries with pistols in 6 hours. It's two hours, then two hours over different days, and by then they're ready to test. That's unheard of. It's unheard. You can't teach entries in 6 hours. I'm like, I didn't think so either, but we did. Mm-hmm. And now people are passing, and then they move on and move down the chain.
Yeah, and they're motivated to do it.
Yeah.
They want to.
And
do
it gets cool again, and all of a sudden they get the dignity of the moms coming by the school and saying, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And that does a thing that you can't really describe within a guy when he didn't know if he was a protector. Mm. Or just an example, there was a very unfortunate tragedy in Vail, Colorado, where one of the young ladies was killed, and it was the pastor's daughter. And they said, they're a small mountain community, and like, we can't function. Like, everybody knew her, and we're supposed to, they're having thousands of people at this thing, and they're like, can you provide security? So I put a team together like that, and I said, they need us. We got our brothers up there that trained with us, but man, they're hurting bad. So we came out there, and all we got all day was, thank you for being here, thank you for being here. And what it did for the team that drove to Vail 2 hours, it's hard to explain. They're like, they needed us, and we came, you know? And I was like, how's that feel? They're like, man, it feels so good. There was like tears, it was crazy. And then we went home. Because somebody was hurting because they lost their daughter, and then they needed us when we showed up.
Yeah. Security will always be the number one priority of patrolling. I mean, that's you need security before anything else.
Yeah.
We're going to do an episode after this for the Philcraft app focused on preparedness, focused specifically on your thoughts on ADC considerations
and
mobility, some of the things that we were talking about before. Where can people find out more about the things that you educate on? What are your platforms? We'll certainly link those down below, but where can people start?
Start at ableshepherd.com, and you can spell that five different ways, but able means capable, so A-B-L-E, and then shepherd, teacher, leader, and protector, right? To shepherd, we're called to be shepherds. So that's S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D. So if you want to see the business and how we all develop that and go everywhere, then check out the website. But if you want to see the heart of it, go to our YouTube channel, also called Able Shepherd. And then you're going to see us interacting with those kids. You're going to see us doing these things and some of the political, you know, hot water I've gotten into and all that kind of stuff. And then our podcast that you've been on, Protector Culture Podcast with Jimmy Graham.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you, Jimmy.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys. We're going to flex hard onto the app right now. If you're interested, you can see the link down below. And I just appreciate you. Till next time.
Hey, guys, if you're watching this, you just saw our podcast with Jimmy Graham. From the SEAL teams to the CIA to training Abel Shepherd, Jimmy Graham's got a ton of experience, and we wanted to capitalize on that conversation, so we took part of it, focused on preparedness, to our Philcraft Survival app. You can go down in the link down below and find that conversation with him and others like Jocko, Andy Stumpf, Evan Hafer, all these experienced operators who have a lot of time behind the gun, who can give you best practices for living your most prepared life. I appreciate you guys and hope you have a good one.